Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. This program emanates from KAZU FM, Pacific Grove, California, and it's broadcast number 687, February the 4th, 1985. I am taking time aside from this week, February, the first week in February, until April the 15th, and I'm not going to be answering mail or telephone calls, so don't get upset and think something's wrong. If you want to write letters, go ahead. And when I get back after that time period and get to the mailbox, I'll answer them. I do want to write, and I can't keep up with what I'm doing and answer the telephone calls and be all things to all people. There's one researcher that wanted to come down from the Bay Area and copy some material about Edwin Meese. My material about Edwin Meese has been available here for the past years, all the time Reagan was governor. Also, when he was running for president and up to the present time. And even though he's going to pass the confirmation hearings as part of the Senate Judiciary, there will be a full Senate vote on Edwin Meese. And I think you should write to your senators and express ideas that were not investigated, but which are terribly important to the character and the tone of Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese as a pair. I will be on the air every week, and we'll have the broadcast as usual. They'll go out, and the cassettes will go out. And I'll be at the Anza College March the 7th. It's Women's Week, and I was up there last year and spoke with them, and we got to get to know each other. And it was a very nice experience. They'll be at 7:30 on March the 7th. But if you want to know about it, call the college. Don't call me, okay? People are spoiled because I'm always available. But I just have to stop it. Somebody called me from Puerto Rico today, wanted to know if I'd have a conference call twice a month or and talk with him, or would I meet him on a conference basis. I had to say no until the middle of April. I was going to say September. Maybe it'll be that long. Until April. But we'll see. I just need the time to do some work and do some writing, and I've earmarked that time. And before the spring gets full-blown, it's hard to cut yourself off. In the summer, this is a good time to do it. Now, last week I was talking about the book, just brought up the subject of Citizen Use by Michael Drosnin, and I'm getting a lot of telephone calls about that. I got the idea now. Again, gets back. I won't be taking the calls, but I like the suggestion. I will be doing a lot on Howard Hughes. It's one of the most important stories, if not, probably second importance to Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger, Daniel Graham, and Alexander Haig. That power combined to me is the most important story in the country. And under that is the Hughes organization, because Howard, as a person, was invisible after 1966 and was drugged out of his head from 57 to 66. But these other people weave in and out of the power structure of Washington and right up to the outer spaces pushing the Star War and the offensive weapons for World War III. Now, this book, Citizen Hughes, was advertised in a five-part series of the San Francisco Examiner across the whole top of the page in big black letters. First of five parts, When Madness Claims the Man in the Pink Bungalow. Now, if the Pink Bungalow man, who's the largest single contractor for the United States government, is crazy, call the doctors, put him in a mental hospital. Who was drugging him? The chief of police of Beverly Hills, Jack Eggers. Who was delivering the drugs? Bobby Hall, who then was murdered, and Eggers was in on the murder and knew the night that he was going to be murdered, and as soon as he was murdered, the gentleman called and said the mission is accomplished. The purpose, I think, of bringing out this book now is to reinforce that old Hughes myth that he was responsible for himself and that his craziness was all on his part, and that he was not manipulated by the federal government. Mr. Drosnin wrote formerly for, and probably still does, for the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. The Washington Post, with Bob Woodward, covered up the entire plans for a military coup in 72, the plans to kill Nixon and keep Agnew, his links to the Nazis in Greece, into Europe, into power. They covered up the Lewis Tackwood allegations were absolutely true of the links of the Los Angeles Police Department and the original plans to kill Richard Nixon. The Bob Woodward story was a total fraud with touches of truth that you could bank on, so therefore you couldn't distinguish what they left out unless you knew the case very, very well or listened to world watchers all the time that those things were happening and going on. Wall Street Journal and Washington Post have a vested interest in this country to not rock any boats and not tell any stories that would shatter the power structure, and the U story would shatter it and blow it wide open if it were really told the way it should be told. There are two characters I'll be mentioning probably for weeks to come, maybe through the year. I'm involved with the Kennedy assassination, with John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Their names are in many books that I'll cite as references for you, but they take new meaning now based on new information. And one of them used the used airplanes at his, those were his private toys to fly back and forth. So the U story always comes into the picture. One of the names is Edgar Eugene Bradley, and the other is Jim Braden. And those of you that have studied the assassinations know those names very well, and they may be new to people who haven't studied them. But the U story and the Bradley-Braden stories are important because, as I say, there are going to be Senate hearings. And if you could send one telegram or 5 letters or 100 letters or 50 letters to members of the Senate and tell them that Mr. Meese, Edwin Meese, should not be the Attorney General for Ronald Reagan until there are full hearings to the relationship of the Nazis up at Hayden Lake in Idaho and in Washington and Oregon to Edgar Eugene Bradley and to Edwin Meese covering up Bradley's extradition when Clay Shaw was arrested and Jim Garrison wanted him for conspiracy to murder the President of the United States. And again, these men link in many ways to the orderly succession of killing at not only John Kennedy, but Martin Luther King and then Robert Kennedy. And that cleared the way for Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan to take over this country in a way that it had never been done before. In the book Legacy of Doubt by Peter Noyes, he mentions just at the end of the book on page 248 how this particular Jim Braden, who was involved in the assassination, was living comfortably at La Costa, that's the Teamsters headquarters playground down near San Diego, and the San Diego County intelligence officers went into his locker. He was a suspect many times for many things and got off all of them, of course, and they went into the locker and found between $1,000 and $200,000, which Braden claimed was had to do with the Empire Oil and Regency Company. But then it goes on to say one of the investigators who appeared to be knowledgeable about the case said he obtained information that Braden had been given the use of 2 airplanes owned by industrialist Howard Hughes. He speculated that Braden used the planes to carry the cash out of Nevada. So the Hughes story, sometimes he's called Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, on page 249 and on 248 is Braden. Mr. Noyes uses 2 spellings, but he did use 3 aliases, including his co-worker, Mr. Bradley. So you can have your choice of names. If I call him Braden or Braden, it is the same person. It goes on to say that in the society columns in San Diego in 1971, he was getting married to somebody. He was married to some very wealthy women and helped his career along those lines. That's another separate story. But he was on his honeymoon. This is like the 3rd wife now. And he was going to have residences at Lake San Marcos in Mexico City and in Spain in 1971. And, of course, in Spain, 71, and from the 50s on, was the home headquarters of our Central Intelligence Agency and their offices with Otto Skorzeny of the Odessa Nazi Network. And Skorzeny links up to the Nazis up in Idaho, as I mentioned once before, through Mr. Erlinger of Buffalo, who attends the meetings of the Nazis up in near Washington State, in Idaho, near Canadian border, and Skorzeny's headquarters for disseminating Nazi money to set up and further the World Nazi Organization, the Fourth Reich, a resurgence has never ended, but went on continuously. He was moving in 1971 to Spain. Now, the Howard Hughes book coming out at this time and the Meese hearings, there's an overlay, as I say, of similarities of characters that weave in and out of this story. Now, Edgar Eugene Bradley is the fellow that Reagan would not extradite, and he should really be put on the carpet for this, because now it links to the very Nazis who have openly said, and I'll read you some more quotes every week maybe, the intention to hang every Jew in the United States and cut their throats, and they have tape cassettes on radio programs telling you how to kill Jews and blacks and get rid of them in this country, every single one of them, even if a few innocent other people die along with it. The fellow writing those tape cassettes and disseminating them on the air is this Colonel William Gale that I wrote about in the Rebel article in 1983 with the Christian Front. And in Legacy of Doubt, it goes on to say, this is another section on page 100. It tells about Mr. Bradley. This is the one that Reagan would not extradite with Mises as legal advisor. Bradley did not hesitate to admit he was in Dallas, Texas, November 22, 1983, the day Kennedy was killed. Brading and Bradley were both in Texas, and they worked together in California. Bradley is the employee of the Reverend Carl McIntyre, a spokesman of the extreme right wing. What Legacy of Doubt doesn't have, and maybe Peter Noyes didn't know it, the Torba document just came out in December of 1970, is that Reverend Carl McIntyre has been identified as the head of the World Council of Christian Churches, the branch of espionage used by Wild Bill Donovan and the OSS as part of their assassination teams. Mr. McIntyre was close to Albert Osborne, a fellow who frequented inside and out of Montego Bay, that worked with the Silver Shirts and the Nazis in the 30s and had youth camps, and Osborne was on a bus going to Mexico City with Lee Harvey Oswald. He ran Osborne, the friend and co-worker with McIntyre and J. Edgar Hoover, a Division F5 of FBI, ran that school for assassins that I've talked about many times. And the Warren Commission hearings have information on Albert Osborne, alias John Howard Bowen. Well, McIntyre is in New Jersey, and under him is Mr. Bradley, who is the West Coast representative for McIntyre. McIntyre is close to Clint Murchison in Dallas, Texas, a man who heavily funded the Minutemen, and we'll go back to that later with the sources and the pages on that. And this book, Legacy of Doubt, tells about a key witness against Bradley having to do with the John Kennedy assassination was Dennis Mower, M-O-W-E-R, the leader of the Southern California branch of the Minutemen. He said Bradley offered him $10,000 to kill John Kennedy in 1960. Now, this is what I wrote. This was a source of information that I used when I wrote my article on the Kennedy assassination of the Minutemen, what happened in 1960. You see, I don't believe for a minute that they planned to kill John Kennedy because of the Bay of Pigs, and I'll cite some more sources I have here for you on that. The minute he got the nomination, he was marked to be murdered. Mower said, "I hate Kennedy, but not enough to kill him." Well, what is new about this? The fact that Mower worked for the American Nazi Party, he worked for the Klan, he worked with Philip Earl Scheib, a fellow who stockpiled weapons in the Mojave Desert for this future bloodbath that's going to happen. The important thing about Edgar Eugene Bradley and the Kennedy assassination is written in Legacy of Doubt, and as I say, when that came out, the Torba document was not known at all. And Noyes says the Garrison plot thickened when the woman said, he's citing a certain witness, she saw Clay Shaw, that's Clay Shaw of the World Trade Center in New Orleans, the man from the OSS that I've talked about that worked with Wild Bill Donovan and Reinhard Gehlen, and the Nazi organization from Nazi Germany. He also is a friend of Hallmar Schacht and Otto Skorzeny. A woman said that she saw Clay Shaw and Colonel William Gale visit the Bradley house. Now, this is very important. And she said Shaw was identified by Jim Garrison as the co-conspirator in the John Kennedy assassination. Colonel Gale is a frequent candidate for public office in California and identified by the California Attorney General as a right-wing paramilitary activist who led the California Rangers that had a lot in common with the Minutemen. Now, what is new about this information for me, and I know it must be for you, is the relationship of the international Nazis of Otto Skorzeny and Hallmar Schacht, who frequented the yacht of Aristotle Onassis and then went on, were part of the Permandex assassination hit team from the international level, Clayshaw of New Orleans, frequenting the home in Los Angeles of Edgar Eugene Bradley and Reverend Gale. Now, Gale is important because even though I had his name a while back, he's making the news stories now for his influence, founding what is known as the Identity Organization, and now breaking out with the murder of Robert Matthews up in Washington near Puget Sound of November 1984. We got into a different ball game because when those Nazis surfaced up there that are into the counterfeiting and to the bank robberies and the Brink robberies that always were Nazi organizations to get money and raise it in Europe for the Waffen-SS and here for the worldwide Nazi organization. When you get Ms. Reverend Gale, who I wrote about working with Charles Willoughby in the Philippines, Willoughby closely associated with Franco and with Mussolini, coming home and joining on the board of Young Americans for Freedom and the John Birch Society. He trained in terrorism and guerrilla warfare and in the OSS with Donovan in India and then in Southeast Asia and came back to get his terror work going to do in this country what they did in Germany, which is to kill every Jew in America. Now, in Germany, they didn't have the problem of the blacks that they have here, so the blacks are on the list as well as other Asians and different colors. But what is a international problem of the Odessa, the Hallmar Schacht, Joseph Mengele, Klaus Barbie, Martin Bormann, Walter Rauf, Hans Ulrich Rudel, the whole top Nazi network that is written over and over again in these books, connects directly to the Nazis and the Klan and the murderous gang that want this overthrow of the United States. And what looks like a group of paramilitary kooks has the highest funding and protection of every police department and the FBI and the Justice Department in the United States. If you want to make a copy of this tape, you can buy cassettes, whether they're three for a dollar. Get a master tape if you haven't started taping this from the Tape Center in Pacific Grove and send these tapes and the sheet that goes with it to your various congressmen. Now, Edgar Eugene Bradley was not sent to New Orleans to be investigated by Clayshaw. He was protected by Meese and Reagan. And why were they protecting him? They were protecting Carl McIntyre, who worked with the FBI and still does, and knew all the inroads of the assassination and the setup of Oswald as the Patsy. And then directly the contacts go to Clayshaw and William Gale and the Identity Movement and various operations then to the Southeast Asian Taiwan link to John Singh Lab, the World Anti-Communist League, and then back to Kenneth Brown, a Soldier of Fortune. And we'll go into that a little bit more in a while. Now, this Jim Braden was also in Dallas when Bradley was there. He was at the Dow Techs building. He had changed his name and his license number. He was a suspect at the time of the assassinations, picked up by the sheriff and released. He stayed at the Cabana Hotel, built by the Teamsters, and met with Jack Ruby and Roy Myers of the Pepsi-Cola Company. Pepsi-Cola, the sponsors of the bottling convention, 3 days up till the time that Kennedy was killed, that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning of the bottling convention. And not only did Richard Nixon speak there, but Lyndon Johnson did. And I have referred to the book, The Pepsi, The Cola Wars, and I'll do more. But Jack Ruby and Roy Myers have contacts directly to David Ferry, the co-worker with Clay Shaw again, who works with Reverend Gale, and Carlos Marcellos. A lot of this, the researchers we had before, but now with the arrests up north and the investigation, or the superficial investigation of what's going on, more of the pieces are coming together. I knew that when the Torbett document and the World Commerce Corporation tied directly to Mr. Donovan and the OSS and the CIA that was formed 2 years later after the war, that was the first major breakthrough of the links of the Kennedy assassination just at the end of the year that I was so excited about. But now, with the arrests and the following up of the FBI, the convention out of six states to the Nazis, the Minutemen, and the Klan. The Minutemen, for all purposes, went under and changed their name to the Survivalists, which is worse. Those Survivalist magazines are similar to Gun Ho, Soldier of Fortune, and one of the editors up till just about a month ago was David Atlee Phillips, the same fellow involved with the Letelier murder, the man who's been suing Don Fried and harassing him, and involved with CIA in South America and other countries too, the death squads and the coups around the world. He's part of the intelligence network who got into the Survivalist magazines. So that Clay Shaw is very important for his links to the International, Skorzeny, Hallmarschach, those Nazis, not the Neos, the real hard German Nazis, and also with Mr. McIntyre and Colonel William Gale and Mr. Bradley and Mr. Braden in Los Angeles, California. As I say, these pieces are all coming together at this time. Now, there was a large article last Sunday, a week ago yesterday, in the San Jose Mercury, A Holy War Built on Hate. Now, this holy war has direct links to the Vatican, to the Inquisition, to the Crusades. This is truly a holy war, and I've cited many times the Knights of Malta, who are on our intelligence advisory group, such as Claire Luce, and there's William Buckley, and James Buckley, and Vernon Walters, and William Casey, and James Angleton. The people making the major decisions that are leading us to this holy war do have links back to this group that has gotten out of hand because people like Reagan and Meese suppressed it. Don't forget, Reagan was governor of California when Robert Kennedy was killed, and that also was covered up by the gang. I have approximately 100 articles on this problem up in the northern area and its national, international links, and I'll go into detail. This story was written by John Hubner of San Jose Mercury. Neo-Nazis foment a white revolution through terrorism. The neo is only neo to a point. And interestingly enough, in writing about the death camps in the San Jose Mercury, if you have a macabre sense of humor, I happen to have one. There is an article on the survivors of Auschwitz getting together 40 years after members of their family were killed. And many of you saw on television the reunion of the Auschwitz survivors. Well, the San Jose Mercury ran this full page and a half on the Nazis up north who go right to Mengele, Bormann, and the top Nazis around the world. And then there's space at the bottom of the page. So they put death camp survivors. This is supposed to be separate from the Nazis in the United States that want to kill every Jew in the United States, which is them. They think they escaped Auschwitz, and the same day, on the same page, these people are talking about killing them. It says, death camp survivors celebrate their liberation 40 years ago. And, of course, the location is Auschwitz, O-S-W-I-E-C-I-M, Poland, Associated Press, January 27th, 1985. Do you remember when the Polish Pope came in? And I cited the background of him from Auschwitz, that he lived in Krakow and worked at Auschwitz. And Auschwitz is and happens to be Auschwitz death camp. If you go back to the broadcast I did, I'm looking at the date here, November the 10th, 1978. That seems like a long time ago. 7 years ago, I have a map. Wadowice, the home of John Paul II. Number two on the map, Auschwitz, the town of Auschwitz, where the crematory, where the Jews and other people were murdered. They changed the name on the map. It was in the newspaper of his home, birthplace, and where he works, and it showed at Krakow, his home. And number two on the map is Auschwitz, and I have cited there that Auschwitz is Auschwitz, and that Pope worked at Auschwitz, the Polish Pope, in the job of assisting with exterminations in some way. He worked for Solvay Chemical, which is IG Farben. So I don't see that often in the newspaper. They, instead of saying the reunion was at Auschwitz, they said it was Auschwitz, and that's exactly what I was trying to tell you a long time ago about this Pope. So while these people, and this is so common. I mean, it's just so pathetic. These people are over there weeping about the loved ones when the chances are they'll see their own family and children, and they have family now, go into the ovens and be killed in the United States. They're all into the computers and the data banks because the money for these robberies is going into phone services and computers that link every Jew in the country and where they work and everything about them. So instead of being vigilant about today, they're so busy crying about yesterday that they can't even read the same page. I wonder how many survivors of Auschwitz or Jewish people reading the San Jose Mercury, just that alone on that page, hearing this broadcast, can tell me if they saw a connection between that article of the gathering, the services at Auschwitz, and the Auschwitz with the Polish Pope, and in the same article about the Aryan Nations and Richard Butler. Now, in the San Jose Mercury, that same article, it says Butler, it describes him as a former Lockheed aeronautical engineer in Burbank, California. He became a racist during World War II in India, where he was a U.S. Army captain on loan to the Royal Indian Air Force. Now, I mentioned before that Mr. Butler, the head of the Aryan Nations up in Idaho, worked at Lockheed while he was in Palmdale and in Southern California. And I've mentioned that before, but there's a quotation in the book, The Assassination of Robert Kennedy, that David Emery reached for on Lockheed aircraft in Burbank, and the exact place that Mr. Butler worked is where Thane Caesar worked, the man who murdered Robert Kennedy. The reference is the book, The Assassination of Robert Kennedy by William Turner, and it tells how his co-author, John Christian, tried to locate the gun that Thane Caesar had when he killed Robert Kennedy. On October the 13th, 1972, Christian reached a man to whom Caesar sold that .22 revolver. The Los Angeles Police Department, incidentally, didn't keep the revolver that the security guard from Lockheed had and admitted shooting the night that Robert Kennedy was murdered. Yoder was living in Blue Mountain, Arkansas. He also was an engineer at Lockheed. Before retiring in the fall of 68, Kennedy was murdered in June 68. He knew Caesar casually from the plant. Caesar's job was floating assignments. He worked off limits where only special personnel had access. He was in the area of the CIA-controlled U-2 spy plane facility. Yoder said that a month after Robert Kennedy was murdered, Caesar showed him the revolver, and he offered to buy it to use it in the Ozarks after he retired. At his request, Caesar wrote out a receipt that said, on the day of September the 6th, 1968, I received $15 from Jim Yoder. The item involved is an H&R pistol, serial number 1Y13332, signed Thane Caesar. Caesar sold the gun 3 months after the murder of Robert Kennedy, and often, according to Yoder, he would drag out his security guard uniform that he used in the evening that he guarded Robert Kennedy, and the revolver, the .22, and his .38 pistol. He didn't mention the Robert Kennedy assassination, but he looked a little worried, and he said something about going to the assistance of an officer and firing his gun that night. He said there might be a little problem. Thane Caesar worked in the division of the U-2. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union when the U-2 plane went down. He had worked at the bases in the Philippines and in Japan. And when Gary Powers was brought home for an exchange with Mr. Abel, a Russian spy, and Gary Powers' feat of downing, being down, broke up the peace conference between President Eisenhower and Khrushchev at that crucial moment in June 60 it was supposed to take place. Downing the U-2 prevented the rapprochement of these two world leaders. And when they exchanged Gary Powers for Mr. Abel, the law office of Wild Bill Donovan of the OSS represented Mr. Abel in the exchange. Another gentleman, Donovan, not Wild Bill Donovan, was the lawyer, but he came from the office of Bill Donovan and made the exchange, and they were involved in the CIA U-2 plane, the exchange of the various people and bringing Gary Powers back to this country. So this Mr. Butler, who runs the Aryan Nations, who gets all of his ideas from Reverend William Gale on genocide and murder and killing all the blacks, and as well as his ideas from Mr. Pierce, who worked for the United States Air Force and United Technology and then went on to the National Nazi Party in Washington, D.C. Richard Butler was a scientist and engineer at Lockheed, and he was there with Thane Caesar at Lockheed at the time that Caesar pulled a gun and Robert Kennedy was assassinated. We'll continue more on this can of worms, this ball of wax, the assassination saga, and the Nazis up north and throughout the United States in about 1 minute. We'll take a 1 minute break and come back for part 2 of this broadcast.